trekking through them desert roads, a long way home. I've been talking to the river, sharing my sorrows. Every time I see that meadow, bunchy leaves and another grows. And through the mist and in the distance, you've got me wondering, who's that brother, what's that sound? Coming from the mountain top, it calls my ears and calls my name. You're all saying the same thing, hold your ground, your time is coming. Go patiently. Calls my ears, calls my name. You're all saying the same thing. Hold your ground, your time is coming.
Humanitarian organization using sport and play programs to encourage the healthy physical, social, and emotional development of the world's most disadvantaged children. RTP at UBC is run by a team of committed university students who advocate sport for development, and it is the first university chapter of its kind. We want you to get involved. Together, we can educate students about sport for development, help raise money, and teach children here in the Lower Mainland about the importance of sport and a healthy lifestyle. So check us out at www.interchange.ubc.ca/RTPUBC.
I'm Marie Bernard, host of Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Join me Mondays at noon as we explore the universal energy that connects us all. Let's discuss our journey of self-discovery, joy, presence, and living with authenticity. We can create positive change in the world, and it starts within each one of us. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Hello, welcome to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thanks so much for being with me today. And we're going to continue our series on boundaries. Last week we weren't on, but the week before we spoke with Joanne Weiler. She's a registered clinical counselor and registered marriage and family therapist. She's also the author of Breakup, Breakthrough, and Learning to Love Again. And so last week we spoke in general terms about boundaries, what boundaries are. And today we're going to be talking about how to set and maintain boundaries at work and how to deal with people who are overstepping your boundaries at work. Next week, we'll be talking about boundaries within your intimate relationships. So welcome to the show, Joanne.
Hi.
Yay. So happy to have
nice
you back.
Nice to be back. It's fun doing this series.
Yay.
Well, yeah.
So we're going to talk next week about relationships, intimate partner relationships. And then what's the last in the series?
We'll put it all together. How do you kind of live in that way? And what are the tools to kind of, check in with yourself so that you are actually, you know, keeping all of the tools that you've learned through the series and integrating it all for life?
Fabulous.
Yeah.
And if anyone has a question, they can feel free to tweet me. My Twitter is Marie Bernard. I don't have my Facebook on my phone, so I won't be able to check that, but you can tweet me at Marie Bernard. And sorry, I interrupted you. You were going to say something.
Oh, no. That's great. And, you know, I appreciate that it is a serious kind of thing in a way, because then you kind of integrate the last, you know, bring it into today. And so, you know, just kind of thinking about what do we know so far in the topic, and I just thought it might be good to kind of go over the sense that there's kind of three styles of boundaries, and diffuse boundaries are kind of anything goes, kind of wanting to avoid conflicts. You just kind of don't say anything when you sense someone's overstepping your boundaries. And then there's the rigid style of boundaries, which is the person who is just, you know, cutting off in relationship. Okay, I won't talk to this person again. They have clearly overstepped my boundaries, and, you know, there's just lots of cut off with that. And then there's the flexible and clear boundaries, which is the ideal. And that is the sense of, you know, being able to say what your experience is and also being open to try to understand the other person. And so with those three sort of things, we move back and forth a little bit, but hopefully we're working towards developing a flexible and clear way to express our boundaries. And the other thing, just to sort of go over what we know, is just that I'd given this acronym of to check in with yourself, and it was how do you draw the line? And with the acronym LINE, so the idea is listen to the symptoms of burnout, because, you know, just checking in with yourself is so important, because you may be reacting a lot more than you would otherwise. And then I is identify the ways that you can take responsibility for change, which we're going to get into today. And N is say no some of the time. You know, just sometimes it's the simple thing that you need to do is just say no and free yourself up a bit. And E is for empathy and the positive energy that comes when we're expressing our boundaries.
I need to express a boundary because I need to be able to lead this interview.
Yes, okay.
I get really stressed out I'm going to ask you a question and you jump in. So, that's my boundary for today.
Okay.
So, but we've gone over LINE, and if anyone missed last week or needs a refresher, they can listen to the podcast of that. And I'm sure you know where to find it. You can also find that at spiritualshow.com. And I believe you, Joanne, have a link to it on your website?
I do. Yeah. JoanneWeiler.com. And I've got a blog post that comes out on different things like this every week or not. It's every 2 weeks now.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so today we're going to talk about how to deal with, how to set and maintain boundaries at work, and specifically when people are overstepping your boundaries, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what does that look like?
You know, you would, for instance, you know, I was at the Elton John concert with my husband and some friends, actually, on Saturday night. And this is sort of the topic of the blog, actually. And, you know, I noticed, like, it was a wonderful concert. He's just, you know, such a dynamic performer. I love Elton John. But I noticed that he, you know, just didn't really talk a little bit much about himself during the concert. And I kind of walked away feeling like, rats, I would have liked to have connected more with him. And in a way, that's an example of boundaries, but for whatever reason, he did tell a few brief stories, but not really kind of as a lot of performers do, or he does, where he will actually express what's going on for him and let you into what's going on in his world. So that would be an example of somebody setting a boundary and what it feels like on the other side of things. So having been at the concert, I walked away feeling energized and, of course, love his music, but also had a sense of like, oh, I wanted to kind of look up, and I did actually look up YouTube's to see if there were any interviews to you know, get a sense of where he's at, because his new album is kind of intriguing. So it's just, you know, it's really expressing your boundaries and also then actually acknowledging other people's boundaries. And then the other part is that sometimes when you do express your experience, sometimes you can be, you know, kind of misunderstood in the expressing of your boundaries. And so that need to be able to look at both perspectives. And I don't know, did you see the blog?
I did. So it, we're talking today about boundaries at work. So it sounds like your example with Elton John is about knowing your own boundary, not necessarily expressing like, this is my boundary, I need you to do this. But in Elton John's situation, it seems like his boundary was just not sharing
as much. Yeah. And just acknowledging that. So recognizing that for whatever reason, what he brought to the table was like fabulous music and a lot of energy and, you know, sort of, you know, all of the stuff that makes me keep going back to his concerts. But I can accept his boundary that's, he didn't bring, you know, the intimate stories that he might have otherwise in other concerts. And so that sort of acknowledging someone else's boundary. And then there's the kind of boundaries that sometimes people could overstep my boundaries, and that would be in a way that, let's just say, you know, we used the telephone example last time. Say somebody's trying to get a hold of you and they phone you once and you don't answer because you are occupied or whatever, and then they keep phoning and phoning. That would be an overstepping of boundaries because they're not actually acknowledging that you have a boundary of your own.
But can I interrupt you for a second,
sure, there,
Joanne? Because unless, I mean, with the Elton John, we're assuming that that was his boundary. He might just not been in the mood, or maybe he was whatever for whatever reason. We don't know that he specifically actively chose not to share as a boundary.
True.
And so if someone's calling you, I mean, that may be your boundary not to answer the phone, but if you don't communicate that with them, then they don't necessarily know that. So they're not necessarily intentionally overstepping your boundaries.
And that's exactly it. And when you do actually ask about what was going on for the other person without assuming, you've got a bridge that actually builds the team. And it prevents you getting into a situation where you start telling yourself a lot of stories around the overstepping or what that meant. It's kind of like if I said to you right now, I want you to think about moon, and you just kind of think of the word moon, and then think about the word fish, and then you think about the word boat, and with each one of those words, you'll have all sorts of things that will come to mind, as we all do. And what we want to do is be able to ask questions about, you know, what comes to mind for you without actually making an assumption. So there's sort of a sense that there's room for both people's experience and also that the thinking that comes to mind isn't, you know, creating turbulence between two people. Does that make sense?
Yes. So how do we communicate? So we're talking about the assumptions, and now not everyone, this is the frustration that is, it's constantly my frustration, is that it doesn't matter how skillful you are. You mm-hmm. can't expect other people to have the same boundaries, communication skills, intellect, whatever. Like, you can do your absolute best and you still are never going to be able to control how other people behave or react.
I know. And it's true. And it requires a lot of sitting back to reflect. So it's, you know, taking time out to kind of almost write some notes down of what do you think might be possible. What do you think is going on in the other person's world that is causing those behaviors or those kind of, you know, what's going on for them? So that's the compassion and the caring, right? It's just that sense of really wondering what might be going on in their world that is causing whatever the behavior is that feels overstepping of you. So I can come to a conversation with a sense of caring and other focusedness. And then also sort of taking time out to consider what's going on for you, that it feels like an overstepping. And we just need to do that more, you know, just slow life down a little bit, be self-reflective and also be other focused and you know, being curious, staying open and curious to what might be the truth for the other person. So I say moon and they're thinking, you know, flying to the moon on a spaceship, and I might be thinking, wow, it was a beautiful full moon this week. So both are really, you know, important stories, and I just want to be open to hear. Those are probably you know, pretty benign examples of what I'm talking about. But, you know, but it's just staying open to what's going on for the other person.
All right. Well, I have an example that came up for me a few months ago, and maybe we can use it. It's a little bit extreme example, but I like stories and examples because it really helps people to grasp material. So I had taken a retail job a few months ago. I wanted, number one, it was a little bit of extra cash. And the main reason, retail is not my favorite thing, but I wanted to do more interacting with people because I work mostly from home. So I took this job to get out in the world. And someone I know, I had been out on one date with this person a few years ago, and he came in with his new girlfriend, and I was happy to see him. I was like, oh my gosh, blast from the past. And he was really uncomfortable. So I had told my, I went into the back and I said, you know, I know this person. Can someone else deal with him? Because he's clearly uncomfortable. And I told, I'm sort of going way too much into the backstory, but long story short, I had told my boss, my brand new boss, this is like second day on the job, that I had been out on one date with this guy. And my boss called me a whore.
Oh.
Yeah. He was using it in joking terms. So I was sort of, first of all, I was totally taken aback. I never would have imagined something so inappropriate would ever come out of an employer's mouth. But I knew at the time that he was joking.
Yeah.
And so I was sort of stuck. I mean, and I was stunned. I didn't even know what to say. So kind of just got through it, and I didn't set a boundary with him because I didn't even know what to do. And at the time, I went back and I thought, okay, well, if he mentions it again, then, you know, I'll set a boundary. He had mentioned it a few times throughout that day, but I didn't, like I said, it was my second day on the job. I didn't know how to react. So I went back and I thought about it, and I thought, okay, if he calls me a whore again, I will let him know that it's really inappropriate.
That's such a great example of your boundary being overstepped. And I appreciate that you took some time to sort of think, what is this important that I, you know, follow this up and set a boundary? And so so that's a kind of an example of sarcasm, which is a way people overstep sometimes. And, you know, him, actually that's almost bullying, really, to call you a whore. It's like he could be joking about it, but the sarcasm has that barb in it that is diminishing. And so first, you know, I would, you have a choice in that moment, like you're in a new job and you're kind of assessing whether it's important to really set this boundary at this point in the early starts of your job or not. I would encourage you to say yes, it is important. And I would first of all sort of do what you did, is take time out, right? And you're asking yourself, like, wow, why did that hit my heart? And what I would say is I you know, probably because it's diminishing, right? It's diminishing to me, and it's insulting, and all sorts of a million things come to mind for me.
Well, I don't even, I mean,
disrespectful.
I just can't allow someone to think that that's okay to say to someone who's working for them.
Yeah. And for him, you don't know, like, if this is just a style of him being in the world, that he also, could grow, be invited to grow with. But I would come back to say, you know, ouch, you know, when you said that to me, I was really taken aback, just as you said. And I know that you want me to feel welcome at work, but when you say derogatory comments like whore, it's, you know, I'm not going to take that well, and it really makes me feel at a distance from you. Because it's actually a distancing tool. Like, sarcasm is usually, it's a tool people use to kind of keep others at a distance. And, you know, he just sort of didn't get what was going on, and he's having an off moment, who knows what. Or maybe he really doesn't like women. We don't really know. But that's the curiosity and the open invitation after. Because you can set the boundary and say, you know, that just doesn't sit for me. And when that happens, I just, you know, it just, it feels all sorts of things, whatever is feeling true for you in that moment. And so you've set a boundary. You can just do that, or you can actually follow it with, like, is that, you know, what was going on for you? And you could ask him, I just really didn't mean anything. And he probably will, you know, apologize. And even if he doesn't do anything, you've set a boundary, and that he definitely probably will not do that again. So sometimes even stating it, like saying out loud, like, I know you wouldn't want me to feel this way, but I just, you know, I was really hurt when you said that. It really took my breath away, whatever's true for you. And if he doesn't even respond, you've still set a boundary that pretty confidently you'll know that he won't do that again. So it's really helpful. I would say we should always name that thing that's just happened, you know, when those things happen, because otherwise you're just headed down a slippery slope that it may happen more and more, and it just ends up being, you know, you're falling into that diffuse style of boundary, and you'll end up feeling minimized at work.
So what do you do, because this is I had decided, okay, well, if he brings it up again, because I didn't want to come back another day and say, you know, when you said this thing, when he's probably already forgotten about it. So I just decided, okay, well, if he says that again, I'm going to bring it up. But he had said something else, not quite that, but, you know, he just had this sort of joking, it was like being in a fraternity or something, you know, like a hazing.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't really think he knows how to deal with women. But anyway.
Probably not. And, you know, it's interesting because I think that's part of the thing is that when we're at work, and whether, you know, it's at a boardroom or, you know, in a retail store, as you're describing, everybody is there with all of their family of origin learning and all of their, you know, vulnerabilities. And, you know, we all just really want to feel safe and secure in our workplace and confident about what we're doing so we can be creative. But these things play out, and they play out all the time at all different levels. I mean, I see it in my office all the time. And sometimes if we can just try to, you know, aim for that clarity, just to say, you know, what your experience is in the moment, it's not a big deal then, but you actually really set a boundary for others to respect you. And that will make such a difference in you advancing in whatever, you know, work setting that you're in. So people know, like, you know, that that's not going to fly. And you feel good. And you actually, you know, with that have more ease and comfort with people around you. And it kind of invites them, like Jefferson says, a little revolution now and then is a good thing. You know, it's good to sort of say something that will help another person really think twice about, you know, just letting things fly.
Well, so when this happened, he wasn't making that same joke, but he was making other jokes. And so I said to him, that was mean. And he did apologize, but then he could still, I mean, I could tell this is part of his personality. He obviously thinks that this is appropriate. He doesn't really know that, you know, what's appropriate employee-employer kind of interactions. So I would have had to be, I mean, long story short, I don't work there anymore. But the thing is, like, what do you do? How, if this is a person's personality and it's clear that this is the kind of person that's going to need a boundary set in every kind of scenario, like, I mean, you're never going to expect this going in.
Yeah.
So how do you handle
Yeah. it? And that's the interesting thing. And the language, the way you would say it to somebody is really important. It helps. Like when you said that was mean, he would probably hear that as like, I am mean. Like she says, I'm mean. And that kind of will probably make him, you know, kind of take on the power struggle with you. And so versus if you said to him, you know, wow, I was really like offended. I just felt offended just then. You know, that is actually more about you, and it doesn't actually label him as a mean person. So it's just a great way to kind of think about what is my experience? What happened for me just now? And then say that thing, starting with a kind of I, you know. I felt kind of, you know, put off just then. You know, I don't know why that was, you know, blah, blah, blah. Even just that will really, it just sent some safety. You know, you're kind of being owning it yourself and open to for him to kind of repair that relationship. It's kind of a relationship repair. He's just not on his game, and, you know, it's totally not okay.
All right. And so, but the thing is that not everyone, I mean, I can hear what you're saying about, frankly, I do think he's mean. I do think he, I mean, maybe not to the core, but he has behaviors that are quite inappropriate and mean.
Toxic, I'd say.
But, yeah. And I did set boundaries, and it's still the it kind of still continued. So what do you do? I mean, you let's break it down specifically in how you address this.
Yeah, and okay, so let's just say you're in a job that really matters to you, and you want to work this through with the other person. The first thing I would do is, you know, try to create some time for the two of you to get together that is for a walk or in a neutral, like, coffee shop or something like that. And so you're setting yourself up in a neutral place that is undistracted, really. And then just, you know, talk about it from what's going on for you. And agree that you don't have to have consensus in the meeting, but just leave an invitation for continued conversation around the dynamic, because it's generally a pattern. You'll find if it's bothering you, it's a dynamic that's sort of, you know, triggering probably for yourself a theme, and probably for him, the other person, a theme as well. So potentially, you know, you both can grow through this ongoing conversation. And, you know, sometimes, like you did, you just had to make a choice about, you know, leaving what felt like a really unhealthy work experience, which I totally, you know, good for you. It must have felt empowering to leave.
Well, it was frustrating. But that's another thing. You talk about the neutral situation, because when it first came up and I was thinking about it for a couple of days, and I knew that if I was going to address it with him, we should be alone, because I didn't want to undermine him in front of other people. And so I was always around. We were always around other people. So it was difficult to know when to address this.
I mean, that's so kind of you, right? I mean, that's the sort of the caring part of you. And then that sets him up to do the same with you. So, you know, having a neutral space, and, you know, make an agreement that you might do this on a regular basis, so that you're slowly building a bridge between the two of you. And you might even, like, at the end of the meeting, sort of check in and say, you know, how are you feeling right now about that dynamic? Whatever it is, 0 to 7 or something like that. And 7, you feel totally resolved. It's great. 0, really stuck. And so it gives you kind of both a sense of measurement that, you know, it's an ongoing conversation. Or let's say you do this on a regular basis once a week for a month and it still continues to be stuck at 0, then you would really sort of be thinking, okay, what should I do next? You know, what are our next steps? So, you know, but in any case, it's going to create change, because you can reference something together. But even just doing it is actually both coming to the table to say, I want to get better, which is basically both of you wanting to get better. And he is the invitation to also be able to do that too.
So it's. I'm just going to keep using this example since we're already on this.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's a great one, because it happens at different level, in, you know, as I say, in boardrooms or in coffee shops or in retail stores, and, you know.
Yeah, and I get the sense that it wasn't. I mean, obviously, it was incredibly insulting. I think most women would have been insulted to a degree. But I knew. I mean, it wasn't so much that it hurt me. Because I knew he was joking, and I have male friends and female friends, you know, like, there's this sort of teasing that you do when you go out for beers or whatever. And it seemed like he was trying to have that kind of environment.
It's oppressive, and it's in body language as well sometimes, where the person will actually not make eye contact or, you know, turn their shoulder away or body language away, sort of disregarding disregarding you, and it, you know, it can be in tone of voice as well, the sort of a dismissive kind of tone. So it shows up in lots of ways, and so again, you know, for us to be curious, and as the relationship builds, you might even say, you know, do you call other people? Do you use that? Do you find that a problem for other people, or for yourself? You might also say, do I? You know, does that show up for me in other places? So it kind of gives you both a sense of starting to understand each other. Because for him, possibly, I don't know, he's got an older sister that is really overbearing, who knows? You know, there might be a birth order thing that's playing out, you know, so he's actually being sort of, aggressive towards you. Or
no, I generally think it was he was trying to be, like, funny, you know? Like,
yeah.
Because, like, you know how guys can be with each other. They'll tease each other, right?
And women, that's too. Like,
and
women,
that's,
too. Like, you know, it's, yeah. Women can be like that. It can be a style in families. And so, even, you know, in cultures as well. And so that sort of tough upper lip kind of thing is that edgy kind of sarcasm. British culture, for instance, you know, it's just, and cultures that have actually, you know, gone through like wartime and things like that too. It's sort of this survival kind of thing. It's edge the other person out instead of, as we're trying today to kind of really, build compassion and understanding and caring and, just that sense of Dalai Lama-ism, you know,
so
love and forgiveness and compassion.
So one of the things, like I said, like I was understanding where I think he was coming from, trying to be funny. And so I don't think he meant it necessarily to be as insulting as it was. And so I was trying to decide, you know, at that time, I didn't even know if I wanted to keep the job or not. So I was, I wasn't quite sure how to handle it. But you have a list of things here. And one of the things is to affirm how you value and care for the other person or the company first, and then to say what your fear is. So I kind of felt like the way I wanted to approach it, I didn't really have the best opportunity, like I said, because we were mostly, we weren't really ever alone. But what I would have said probably is, hey, I know that you're joking. I know you don't, I get the sense that you're not trying to insult me. And my fear or my concern is that I don't want you to think that it's okay to call me a whore at work because I feel like it's really not appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Would that be a fair way to address it?
Yes, it's a great way to address it. And so in that, in the pattern that you just described, it's the affirmation first. You know, I value you as a human being. You know, I want to value everybody as a human being because we've all, you know, we can see each other and each other kind of thing. And that makes the person feel safe for the conversation. Like, I don't want to attack you, your character, who you are, but I want to talk to you about this thing that happens between us. Or, you know, I really feel offended. I can actually tell a story about my, I hope my brother-in-law wouldn't mind me saying this. Maybe I'm overstepping a boundary. But, you know, my husband is, you know, comes from a family of five kids, and they're, they've got a wonderful family. I love his family. And you know, boys are boys in the family. It's mostly boys in their family. I think four out of the five children are boys. And so we were in Hawaii, and we're walking down the beach, and it's my husband and his brother, and the three of us are walking on the beach, and, you know, it's a kind of bikini-clad kind of culture in Maui, and my brother-in-law looked at, you know, really overtly looked at this girl going by, you know, and my sister-in-law was there, too, this girl going by with, you know, a really great body, and of course, I just, you know, notice myself kind of like, you know, reacting in that moment. And what I said in the moment was just like, gee, you guys, you know, eyes on the road. You know, it's just sort of, I set my own boundary. And it's interesting because for my sister-in-law, it really didn't bother her at all. And it was kind of like not a big deal. And it shouldn't be a big deal. And it's not right, the right or wrong of it kind of thing. But in a way, for me, I felt a bit embarrassed for women or something in that moment or something. I'm not sure what was going on, but that would be another example that, you know, our boundaries are valid, whatever they are. You know, it doesn't have to be, it's not the truth of the world kind of thing, but it's true for us. So it's kind of, sometimes you could have a boundary that is totally irrational, but it's really important if the person that you're in relationship oversteps it, that you actually express it, you know. So does that make sense to you?
It does. I'd like to get do the practical tips here because
sure.
we have like a whole page
yeah.
of tips
okay.
and we only have a little bit of the hour. And also maybe we could bring that up again next week, that
sure.
example.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it's more of a intimate partner type of boundary.
Yes, it is. And the work thing, first of all, when you're having problems with somebody that's kind of overstepping, set up a schedule time for yourself, first of all, to kind of think about what it is that's bothering you about the boundary overstepping, and then spend some set up a schedule to get together once a week with that person, so you are in a safe space to be able to talk through the dynamic. And then the third part is to start with that that sense of talking about yourself, like, I felt this when that happened. So it's not an attack of the other person. So I'm referencing, this happens for me when you say that, and I don't think that's what you want me to experience. It makes me feel at a distance from you, or whatever. You just, you know, you sort of own it yourself for whatever reason, and it doesn't have to be the truth of the world, but it's your truth.
So, Joanne, it sounds like you're saying you want to set up a weekly meeting with the person at your work. What if that's not possible, or like, what if they don't have time for that? And also, do you need to talk every week? Like, I'm just kind of, things, boundaries for me, like, they're generally unexpected.
Yeah. And you know, sometimes it won't be important, too. If sometimes somebody might overstep your boundaries that is not somebody that is essential to the work you're doing. So if you would ask yourself, is this important to my being able to do my work? And if you said, yes, that is really impacting my ability to show up at work, then it's something that you would want to have an active plan in place to be able to kind of start to create change there. But if it's not somebody that really matters to your ability to do your work, then you probably would say to yourself, don't sweat the small stuff and let it go. So there's that question that you would ask yourself about, you know, is this important to work through? And going back to your retail job, probably it would have been good for you to be able to talk it through, and you might it might not be a regular meeting in a situation like that. It may just be that you're making a commitment in that conversation to say, would it be okay with you that when I notice this, or if I feel my boundaries are overstepped, would it be okay with you if I let you know? And that person can then, you're sort of making an agreement together that is kind of a partnership. Oh, sure, you know, he'd probably say, oh, God, yeah, I don't realize when I'm doing it, so let me know, you know, or else, you know, but that can help as well.
Great. And it's interesting because even with, I did have to set another boundary. I had to talk with him about I let him know the way that I learn most effectively, and the way he was training was kind of the opposite of that. And so I had spoken with him and let him know, you know, I need to, there's things that I need to learn, and I'm not picking them up in this way because, well, long story short, I wasn't actually being shown. And so I did set another boundary, and he responded well to that. But then again, it didn't, it didn't work. The job didn't work out, so it doesn't matter. But
well, it is, but it's good learning, and I, you know, appreciate that, you know, you're sort of reviewing it, and that's what we all should do. What you're describing is that there was a context of stress at the workplace, and, you know, and that's a really good point because that's something to consider, and that would be something that joins you in the experience with the other person because you can acknowledge, gee, have you noticed there's been a lot of change at work lately, and I've just, you know, and even just acknowledge, you know, I just notice I'm kind of arriving at work a little bit stressed. How about you? Are you too? Because in stress work situations, often boundaries can be overstepped, and it's partly just the sense of the pace of life, you know, changes when companies are in change or they're in expansion or phases or change in job positioning and that kind of thing. So contexts of stress are really important to kind of take into consideration.
And so, Joanne, how much planning ahead, because like this one came totally out of the blue, unexpected, but there's a lot of things that you can sort of no might happen at work, as an example, being asked to stay late, the things that are sort of typical areas where you may need to set a boundary. How much do you prepare in advance, and how much you should you be ready to just deal with things as they randomly come up?
Yeah, and so that's a good one. I think these days, you know, there's so much pressure generally in the workplace about time. We're working like longer and longer work hours, and then, you know, building personal deficits on the other end, and then ending up with more toxic workplaces. So the questions that I really encourage are the what questions. So I would come to your boss or to the person that oversees the workload and say, what do you think of this? This is what I'm noticing. You know, my work is going, 2 hours longer than it should be, and I'm noticing myself feeling more and more fatigued, and then, you know, whatever is true for you. And again, saying to your boss, what should we do about it? So you're using that we as a joiner. So the sense of what can we do about it. So there's no blame in that. You know, he's probably not intending to swamp you, he or she. So there's just sort of, he or she doesn't know that that's actually the case, or quite possibly he or she does know, but you haven't actually expressed your boundary before, and you're trying to do that now to create a solution. So you're solution-focused in the conversation.
Okay, I have a question then. This is actually the guy who came into my job who I'd had one date with. We're still friends. That's why I was so surprised that he was uncomfortable when I saw him. I guess he was just sort of thrown off. And anyway, so he had had a job where the job culture there was basically slave labor. And he had tried to set boundaries and set boundaries and set boundaries, and it just wasn't working. This person just did not accept that labor laws in Canada are that we have that. It was just sort of like, well, I'm going to work you 14 hours a day and you can just deal with it.
Wow.
So if you're in a situation where you've attempted to set boundaries, where even legally you have rights and all of that, and they're just not being followed no matter what you do, then, I mean, eventually you're going to have to leave that position.
Yeah, and now there's things in place that people can file a complaint. And, you know, but, you know, the first thing is to kind of really, have that conversation to say, you know, listen, we've met, and, you know, kind of keep track on your calendar. You know, I've talked to you about this issue this time, and that time. And, I just notice, things aren't changing. What do you make of that? So you're sort of giving that final chance for change to happen, because, you know, part of me is really thinking I've got two choices here to, you know, go above you to have resolution, but I really feel badly to do that. It's not my first choice, or actually to, you know, leave the job, which isn't my first choice either, because I, you know, value where I'm working, if that is true, and take a legal course, which, you know, obviously you don't want to do either. So it's really sort of really assuming that you can have a resolution together, and really showing up again with what your experience is, and then just really asking questions like, what is going on for you? You know, what is it about this dynamic that's really hard for you to support me in this? You know, so you really just keep asking those questions.
And at what point do you just have to protect yourself? Because I've been in positions where I've brought up a reasonable concern, and then the boss has found some reason, made up some reason to fire me. Obviously unrelated to the situation, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, there are, like I said at the beginning of the hour, it doesn't matter how skillful we are, there are people who are not going to react well to boundary setting.
Yeah, you can't teach somebody else to get this. You can just sort of set up a situation for them to discover it. And if they don't, then you really do have that choice to sort of to say to yourself, you know, this is my life. At the end of the day, I just got this life. And if it's impacting my health and other parts of my life, is it worth it for me to, you know, struggle on this path? Or what are my options? And like you made that great decision that day to kind of, you know, it's not worth it. And that's where the numbers kind of start to add up, you know, that you've been sort of asking yourself, how am I feeling in this relationship, 0 to 7? Yes, it's improving, or no, it's really not, then, well, I really want to probably look at other opportunities.
So because our work is, I mean, unless we're independently wealthy and just working for the fun of it, we rely on the work, we need the work. So even if we're looking for another job at the same time, you know, sometimes you have to stay in a bad situation temporarily and just cope with it, and maybe setting boundaries. I mean, if you've attempted to set boundaries previously and this person is not at all receptive, then do you have some tips on how to cope with someone temporarily not respecting your boundaries? So you have to stay there out of, you know, needing to pay your mortgage or your rent.
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with that?
Yeah, and again, I would talk to the person that is overstepping to say, look, this is a dynamic that we've been trying to work through, and clearly we're not making progress on this. Let's the two of us talk to, and then the person that's above your boss, right? Can we actually set up a meeting, you know, with that other person? Because that, again, actually is healthy, because you're actually bringing that person with you. And there isn't a sense of triangling happening, that you're really still, look, I'm really committed to having resolution on this, and clearly we need another person in on this. And or else also, you know, quite often it can be a good idea for the company to have a tune-up and having somebody from the outside come in and assess what's going on in the team dynamics in the workplace. And that can be really helpful as well.
So this is assuming that you're not dealing with the owner of the company or the highest up that you can go. So how, if you're really in a situation where, because the fact of the matter is that when you start saying, I'm really wanting to do this, like sometimes people just don't even, there are people, as I had mentioned last week on the show, people with personality disorders.
Oh yeah.
Running organizations, running businesses. It's actually quite common. And so this person, you know, you may try and you may, you know, try to establish boundaries and be as respectful and effective as possible. And it's just not going to happen. It's not safe for you to do so. They're going to get more frustrated. So how do you cope temporarily while you're looking for, you've already weighed the pros and cons. This is not a safe place to stay, but you're here for the moment. How do you take care of yourself in that time?
Yeah, exactly. And so that is just, you know, because you need to accept the other person is not going to change. In a sense of a personality disorder, it's, you know, it's a lifelong, you know, situation that, you know, you cannot change the person, and you only have the sense of changing things that you can do yourself. And so, yeah, it's coming back to, you know, the taking care of yourself. You know, make sure that you get some exercise before work so you're in a really great, healthy brain state when you arrive at work, so you're kind of more resourced to be able to deal with them. And have at your, you know, fingertips a tool to kind of calm you when you get triggered. So, you know, just it could be just breathing. Even just breathing triggers your rib cage, you know, all the intercostal muscles trigger your brain to calm you. So breathing 4 times in and out, the tapping, you know, exercise as well. When you have your hands on your knees and you do that alternate tapping for a minute or so and then just hold your hands there, that releases the attachment hormone oxytocin, which will calm your brain as well. And that will help you not take it personally. So you can actually bring, you know, your best compassionate self to work, and then just really depersonalize what's going on, knowing that eventually this dynamic will probably run itself out and the person will trip themselves up. So you can sort of hang in there, and you'll see that they will eventually undermine themselves in that dynamic. So it's just about staying sane in the process. So those tools can help: the breathing, the tapping, not taking it personally. It helps to journal to get, you know, some of the your thoughts, you know, out on the page so that you have that perspective.
Joanne, is there, you mentioned the tapping and the oxytocin. So yeah. What if you're in a situation where you're not able to sit down or you're not able to be in private? Can you do that tapping on, say, your hands or somewhere else?
Yeah, if right now, actually, as we're talking, take your hands to across your chest kind of thing. And so at your chest level, at the sides of your body, and I'm doing this with you right now, just alternate tapping right now. And as you do this, you could be standing in a hallway, or you could be in a meeting, and you alternate tap right now as we're doing this right now, and I'm just able to carry a conversation on. But what I'm doing by doing the tapping is I'm activating my skin, which will then activate the release of oxytocin, the attachment hormone. So keep tapping with me right now.
So when you say alternate tapping, so you're tapping on each, like on your
hand.
So where on your hand are you tapping?
Yeah, so I've got my arms crossed across my chest so that my fingertips are at the side of my body. And I'm just alternating 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, like that at the side of my body. And I'm
so you're
just
tapping
breathing.
Your hands, or you're tapping the side of your body?
I'm tapping using my fingers at the side of my body. So
are you tapping the side of your body, or are you tapping your other hand?
No, I'm tapping the side of my body.
Okay.
So both sides of my body. So I've got my arms crossed right now and across my chest, and I'm just with my hands placed at the side of my body, so holding the side of my body, and just my fingers are tapping. Alternately, like 1, 2, 1.
So I can't see you. So where on your body are you tapping?
Let's say at your bra strap, at your bra strap there. So you've got your arms across, and your arms are crossed over, and you are just holding your arms kind of like a hug. So you're kind of hugging yourself, and your hands are there, and you're just alternate tapping. And as I'm doing this, I'm able to carry a conversation. It's pretty subtle. If someone was to look at me right now, they wouldn't really know what I was doing. And it's a tool that you can use in a hallway. And now what you do is you just hold your hands in place, and you'll feel a kind of warm feeling that runs through your chest. You might even feel it into your jaw. And that's the release of oxytocin in your bloodstream. And oxytocin is the attachment hormone, which is released to make you feel safe and calm.
Okay, so just to clarify, I'm not going to fall in love with the person who's being mean to me if I'm releasing oxytocin?
No.
Okay.
You're actually putting yourself in a calm state. And so what it's doing is just calming you down so that we could actually, be having that perspective that, you know, what's happening, what the person's saying or whatever they're doing, it's really not about me, it's about them. But when things are said, oftentimes it does, it's easy to take it personally, and that's what triggers the stress response, because I feel vulnerable. So that fellow in the retail store that called you a whore, and it may be a style of his or whatever, totally inappropriate, in that moment, it felt really, I don't know, what did that feel for you? Dismissive, I guess? And
I don't even know. I was just shocked.
Yeah, shocking. I agree.
Yeah.
And so, and for him, he's being in that frat house, as you mentioned, mentality, and sort of not intending it probably, but still it's not okay. So by tapping, I'm not going to be wanting to bonk him over the head, but I'm able to kind of see him as a frat house boy in that moment and maybe have compassion for, not knowing that that's not appropriate, and then, inviting the conversation. So it's really important to have a tool that you can actually self-regulate. So self-regulation is that ability to just slow down the experience so that you're not just reacting.
Wonderful. That's a good tool to have.
Yeah, it really, it's amazing. And if you were sitting in your desk, you can do the same tapping exercise, and it's just amazing how calming it is. So, same thing, you'd be sitting in your desk, and you put your hands on your knees, just kind of when we're kids, you know, that Charlie horse thing, you just at that same sort of range, hands on your legs, and you've got your hands flat, palms down, and just lifting the top of your fingers up and down, alternate, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, pretty firmly. And, you know, you might be sitting at your desk, and you could do this if you had a stressful conversation to work through a boundary conversation with somebody. You do this before you meet with them. And just do this for about a minute, and then just hold your hands there, and you'll feel a kind of warm vibration down your legs and even up into your chest, into your core. And what we're doing in that is partnering with our bodies to kind of bring our best version forward to the conversation so that I can express my boundary, but not as an attack of the other person, but really, you know, with compassion and also acknowledging what my experience is.
Wonderful.
Always starting with I. Well, I've been feeling
Well, Joanne, we're just about out of time.
Okay.
So your website is joannweiler.com.
It is.
And how would you like to wrap up the show today?
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you for the opportunity. It's so fun to have our second session. And so we're all in this process together, learning about ourselves and learning about others. I've got a Sufi proverb I came across that I'd love to read, and it says, "I searched for God and found only myself. In searching for myself, I found only God." And I think it's a nice way to wrap up. I think God in terms of good energy and shared goodness between us all, and just want to end with that.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Joanne. We'll be back next week talking about romantic relationships and setting boundaries with those people.
Looking forward to it. Thanks again.
Thanks, Joanne.
Bye.
Okay, so this has been Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thank you so much for being with me. You can find more information about the show, podcasts, all of that at spiritualshow.com. I want to send you so much love. Be well. Namaste. Coming up in just a second here on CITR is Parts Unknown, so stick around for that.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is Monday.
From 1 to 3 p.m.
Who is this guy? Does he have a name? Does anybody know where he's from?
My name's Chris Horrific.
You always wanted his character to be bigger than life.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is, without question, the greatest sports and entertainment event of all time. Be a part of it, Monday.
From 1 to 3 p.m.
The Parts Unknown Show on 101.9 CITR. Sometimes cosmoses collide.
Break your fingers!
Hi, my name is Emily, and I'm hoping you'll join me in discovering how UBC is bringing sustainability into action by attending Ripple Effect events September 22nd to 26th. Get a free mocha! Learn to recycle! Take a blind taste test between tap water or bottled water. Oh, and you just have to join hundreds of guests, and me of course, for a sustainable meal on Main Mall. Seriously, you can't miss this. It's going to be epic. You can get all the info at sustain.ubc.ca/ripple effect. Oh, and use the hashtag RippleEffectUBC.
Yoga Fest, September 24th. Enjoy free yoga taster sessions from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Main Mall on the hour. Bring a towel. Everyone's welcome. All donations go to Shinarama.
Mm-hmm.
Are you not sure where to go on campus? Traveling late at night and afraid to go alone? Call SafeWalk, a free service where a co-ed team will take you anywhere you need to go on campus. Don't walk alone. For a walk, add SafeWalk to your phone. Call 604-822-5355. That's 604-822-5355. Alternatively, use a UBC Blue phone and ask for SafeWalk. Approach any SafeWalk team or drop by our office on the main floor of the sub across from the gallery lounge.
Because you're mine, I walk the line.
FM Vancouver Reloaded, playing your favorite tunes and mouth-humping your ear holes full of voice talk. Yeah, we do that.
UBC's Museum of Anthropology displays long-term and visiting exhibits of Indigenous art from around the world, and guided tours are free. Our permanent collection features one of the world's finest exhibits of Northwest Coast First Nations art. Our collection includes 30